Favorite beginning on the top of Kufmem Mamad Aleph, second line down. The Gemara here is continuing to discuss the fact that they think the word Sipor only refers to kosher birds, and therefore there's a limitation on the din of Shiluach HaKain that it only applies to kosher birds. So when it says Tashma, the Pasuk says Kol Sipor Tehora, all kosher birds that you're allowed to eat, the fact that it has to tell you that it's a Sipor Tehora, Michlal Dika Tmeya. The only reason you'd need to qualify or modify the word Sipor is if Sipor could mean more than one thing. If Sipor automatically meant Tehora, then you wouldn't have to write Kol Sipor Tehora. You could just write Kol Sipor, and by definition, it would be Tehora. The fact that it tells you Tehora means that there must be a Sipor that's also Tmeya. Where it says, Lo, Michlal Deika Sura. It's not that there is Tehora and Tmeya, but rather within the world of Tehora, there's a tzipor that's tohora, that is accessible, that is mutar to you. And there is a tzipor that is not accessible, not tohora to you. Not because it's tmeya, but because there's some other problem. Mahi, what's the other issue that disqualifies it? Itrefa, if it is itrefa, behedjaktiv, that is explicit in the pasuk, nevela itrefa lo yochal letama ba, ani Hashem. And the Gemara Darshan says, speaking about an Op Tahor, Nevelat Op Tahor, so that already is subsumed in a separate Pasuk and Pashat Emor. The Ibi Shkuta de Mitzora, if you want to speak about the Shkuta of a Mitzora, Misefet de Kronofka, that learned out of the remainder of Pasuk in Pashat Rehei, Vizeh Asher Lo Tochlu Mehem. These are the birds that you can't eat. There are both Shkuta Mitzora, to include the Mitzora, because it could have just said, v'zeh shelo tochlu, what is mehem? The extra mehem, extraneous word there, comes to teach you that there's certain of amongst them, them being the tehorim, that you're not allowed to eat. And that is a shkutat mitzora. The mitzora, as part of the tarata mitzora, has to have two birds, one of which is shechted, one of which is sent away. The one that is shechted is not a kosher shkita in order to allow you to eat it. It is a shechita, but the bird is disqualified from being eaten. It's not isur hanan, you have to bury it afterwards. That's what it comes to teach you, that that bird is not kasher. But that you already learned from the latter half of the pasuk, not from the beginning of the pasuk. So then again, what's the deal that you're making out of kol tzipor tehora? Mar says, olam b'shechuta demitzora. It is actually that din that we're learning. Lavor la ba'asei v'lo ta'asei. At the beginning of the next pasuk, there it says, v'sher sher lo tochlu mehem. These are those that you can't eat. That teaches you a lav against eating that shkuta of the mitzora. But the first pasuk teaches you an asay, because it's a lav haba michlal asay, which is the asay is kol tzipor tohura tochelu, that you're allowed to eat it. Then the diuk is that if it's not tohura, you can't eat it. That is a lav haba michlal asay, and that's a qualification as an asay. Therefore, now you have a violation that is both an asay and a lot asay. It says, well, look, my betrayfa. If that's the case, you can say that the beginning of the pasuk is speaking about a treifa as well. The pasuk you quoted me from Parshat Emor is a lotase. What about the pasuk in A? Maybe that'll be an asay for treifa. My answer is, shlosh yisrei midot, Torah nidreshet v'hem, davar alamed minyano, that you learn something from its context. Ubinyano deshkuta aktiv. The pasukim, they are speaking about shkita, or things that are shakut. It's not speaking about trefot. Since the pasuk is telling you which birds you can eat and which birds you cannot eat, obviously the birds you can eat can only be eaten with shkita. That means it's speaking about kosher birds that had a proper shkita. In that context, the pasuk would come to exclude something that has a similar genre, which is a shkita ksheira. Despite the fact that it has that, it's still a surah because of the fact that it is a shkutat mitzora. So therefore, contextually, it makes more sense to explain it as a reference to a shkuta that has a failure, which is the shkutat mitzora. And therefore, the assay references to that, to tell you there's an Easter assay, as well as that there is a lav associated with it. To speak about shreifa in this context doesn't make sense because it's just not contextually what the pasuk is speaking about. Now, that is true only about the shkutat mitzora. The other bird of the mitzora, which you set free, that bird is actually mutar bahana'ah, and that bird you can utilize. As Rashi notes over here, we mentioned it previously, which is that the mishulechet is mutaret, because the Torah doesn't do something shikashel ba'adam, that people are going to run into problems with it. If you say that the one that you've set free is a sur ba'ana, how are they going to tag it? How are they ever going to know? And so therefore, the Torah definitely didn't make it a sur ba'ana in that case. Where it says, tashma. So let's go further into this issue of the birds of the Mitzorah. There it says that you will take shtei tziporim chayot tehorot, that you will take two birds that are alive, that are tehorim. My chayot, what does it mean that they are alive? Lav she chayot bificha, isn't it that they are alive in your mouth? Which means that you would have permission to eat them or that you could eat them. Michlal, deika lav she chayot bificha. That tells you that there's some that you cannot eat. So chayot over here would be a definition of kosher bird versus non-kosher bird. And again, you're modifying the word tziporim, which tells you that there are two types of tziporim. Is it tzipor that you can put in your mouth? Kosher. There's a tzipor you can't put in your mouth? Not kosher. That means the word tzipor means both kosher and not kosher, and you have to qualify it for me to know that. Versus low, my chayot, shechayin rashay evarin shelahen. Chayot over here means that their limbs are intact. So even though, and we'll see in a second this in a more deeper sense, that the birds here are not brought as korbanot in the Mikdash. This is all processed outside the Mikdash, the Tarat HaMitzorah. Nevertheless, the birds have to have the same qualifications as a korban that is brought. With regards to a bird, a mum is not posel, only a mechuser aver. It's missing one of its limbs, then it's posel, it's a problem with mum. So over here too. Chayot means that their limbs are intact, so that they would have been otherwise sheirim on the mizbeach in the mikdash. Tashma miseifa. What about the next word in the pasuk? Shtei tziporim chayot tehorot. What about tehorot? Miklal deika tmeot. Again, you can make the same diuk again. Lo miklal deika treifot. Where it says treifot mechayot nafka. Treifot we already learned out from chayot. Chayot means that they have to survive. Treifot die within the next 12 months. So chayot is the opposite of treifot. And if you require chayot, then obviously treifot are disqualified. That works well, according to one who says a treifa does not die within 12 months. Rather, the treifa lives a longer period of time. Most likely, the way the Balei Tosafot frame it is that it is in a deteriorating state. It won't die within 12 months, but it will never be fully healthy again. But in that case, chayot does not exclude treifa. And that's why you need the next word, toro, to exclude a treifa. Alamandamar treifa inachaya, according to the view that the treifa dies within the next 12 months, then you already covered that with the word chayot, ma'ika the meimar. What are you going to do with the word toro? The ode, ben lamandamar treifa chaya, ben lamandamar inachaya, whether you think a treifa is able to live or not, what about me, the tana debay rabbi shmol nafko? We can learn all of this out of Rabbi Shmuel's limud. The Tana, the Bei Rabbi Shmuel. There's a brayta from the Bei Midrash Rabbi Shmuel. Nemar machshir umechaper bifnim. Nemar machshir umechaper bachutz. My machshir umechaper amor bifnim. Asabo machshir kemechaper. Av machshir umechaper amor bachutz. Asabo machshir kemechaper. This is a reference to a number of processes that take place. Yeah, first of all, the Tarat HaMitzorah. Tarat HaMitzorah is a machshir that happens bachutz. It is a process by which it now releases the Mitzorah, at least in the early stages, from the issues that he has as a Mitzorah. He still has to complete that process over the next 7 days, but this is the beginning of the Taharat HaMitzorah, which means that it is a machshir, not a mechaper. It's not coming as a kapara from him. It's coming to facilitate his ability to become tahor. So that is what we call machshir bachutz. We also have a machshir bifnim, which is the mitzorah at the end of his 7 days. On the 8th day, he's going to bring korbanot in the mikdash. Those are korbanot and asham mitzorah and a chatat of the mitzorah. Those are known as machshirim. It's actually a tension that's found in the Gemara over the place as to whether the chatat that the mitzorah brings, it's not only true of the mitzorah, it's true of the Yoledet as well as the Nazir. Are those chataot coming like regular chataot to be mechaper? If that's the case, you have to search for what they did wrong in order for them to have a mechaper. And that's where we find the memrot, like by a Nazir. Because he restricted himself in the drinking of wine, Therefore, he has to bring a chatat, the woman who's giving birth, because she makes a nether not to have another child. She needs to bring a chatat. And the mitzorah, for the obvious reasons we'll see in Masechet Arachim, Chazal viewed the mitzorah as being a punishment for someone that did something wrong, amongst which that are listed there is Lashon Hara, and therefore you would need a chatat. But there is another prevalent view within the Chazal, within Shas, that the chataot there are not regular chataot, but called chataot amakshirim. They're not coming to be mechaper, but rather they're functioning like a korban that's not mechaper, but simply a facilitator for the tara of the individual, for the yoledet. Again, for take away the tumat leida, for the mitzorah, to take away the tumat mitzorah, for the nazir, in order for him to restart his count, to take away the nazir bitumah, and allow him to start a nazir bitahara. So in all those cases, the chatot are facilitators. And that's what's being said here as well. We have a facilitator that's a makshir bifnim, which are the chataot, the chatat, and the asham of the mitzorah. Those are makshirim bifnim. Then we have mechaprim bifnim, and mechaper bachutz. Mechaper bifnim is any regular chatat and asham in the mikdash. You bring them in order to be mechaper. The mechaper bachutz is the seira mishtaleach. On Yom HaKippurim, the seira mishtaleach is a mechaper that's done outside of the mikdash. So now, what Tana Debrei Rabbi Shmuel says is that we have a machshir and a mechaper bifnim. V'nemar machshir u'mechaper bachutz. My machshir u'mechaper hamur bifnim. Asabo makshir ke mechaper. Just like bifnim, the makshir, which is the chatat and asham of the mitzorah, have the same din as a chatat and asham of someone who's coming to be mechaper on any other aveira. So even though that of the mitzorah is a makshir, a facilitator to make him tor, and the others are to be mechaper, nevertheless their din is identical, which is that the chatat and the asham of the mitzorah are no different than any regular chatat v'asham. There's certain things you have to do with the dam, certain things that are slightly different about the process, but in general, the din of the animal, that is bifnim, has the same din, whether it's a makshir or mechaper. So too, Tana Debrei Rabbi Shmuel says that the makshir and mechaper should be identical bachutz. Now, as far as the seir mishtalech on Yom HaKippurim, we know that the behemah, the seir, has to be kosher the mizbeach. The reason that's true is because before it became the Seir Shemishtaleach, there was a goral. There was a lot that was thrown to decide if it was Seir Lashem or Seir Lemishtaleach. That means that both of them had to be qualified to be Seir Lashem, otherwise you can't have a goral on them. The fact that it had to be Seir Lashem means even when it is a Seir Lemishtaleach, it was a kosher korban because it could have been Lashem. So therefore the Mechaper Bachutz is also a kosher korban, and something that doesn't have mumim, has to qualify. That step that Rabbi Tana Debrei Rabbi Shmuel wants to take is, just like bifnim, everything's identical, so too by chutz, everything's identical. By mechaper, by the seir mishtaleach, we already know that it has to be kosher the korban, so too, therefore, the birds of the mitzorah, bachutz, have to be kosher the korban. So once you know that, then you don't need the din of chayot to teach you about roshei evarim. And then according to the one that says that treifa ain a chaya, you also don't need the word tehorot. So now, what do you do with these words that are qualifying tzipor and seem to indicate there are different types of tziporim out there, not only kosher tziporim? El Amar Rav Nachum Yitzchak. Rav Nachum Yitzchak comes along to tell you that it is the me'utei tziporei ir hanidachat. To tell you that the birds from an ir hanidachat do not qualify. Lamai, but don't they qualify for? Ilish Luach, if you're talking about sending away the bird, of the two birds of the mitzvah, one is shechted, one is set free. So, Lal Amra Torah, Shaleach Letakala. Again, this is that principle that Rashi already noted for us, which is the Torah is not going to tell you to do something that's going to be a problem. A bird from an ir anidachat is asur behana'a. It's something that needs to be killed and buried. It has to be taken care of like the remainder of all the possessions of an ir nidachat. If you allow him now to send it away, and people are then going to be able to capture it or take it, you're creating a takala. So certainly that can't be where you would even have a hava mina, that you could have permission to use the birds of an ir nidachat for this. Ela l'shchita. It is for the bird of the mitzorah, l'shchita. That shchita, after you've shefted the bird, and you take that little blood, you bury it in the ground, which is exactly what you would have to do with the possessions of an Eir Nidachat. So maybe on its way to being buried, you happen to sheft it and use it for Tarat HaMitzorah. Maybe that would be qualified. Along comes the words of Chayot and Torot to tell you that it's not the case. You can't use a bird of a Mitzorah that comes from an Eir Nidachat. So there are a number of things that might have disqualified this bird before we ever got to the point that the pasuk tells you that it's problematic. The first of which is, it's asur ba'ana'ah. So if it's asur ba'ana'ah, how are you able to utilize it over here? So the answer to that would be, mitzvot lav lehanot nitnu. Mitzvot are not given to get hana'ah from them. You can perform a mitzvah with isrei hana'ah because we don't define the accomplishment of the mitzvah as being hana'ah. And therefore, the usage of isrei hana'ah would not be a violation of that isur hana'ah because you're not really getting hana'ah from it. That would solve the problem in terms of isrei hana'ah. The other issue, which is much harder to deal with, is that the Gemara says in a number of places, including in Lulav HaGazul, in Gemara Sukkah, that you can't use a lulav from an Eir Nidachat because kitutei michtat shi'urei. It's as if it doesn't exist. So over there, you should be able to invoke the same principle. Mitzvah lav le'anot nitnu. You could shake the lulav from Eir Nidachat. Gemara says over there, the problem is, it's as if it's dust of the earth. We look at it as if it is already cut up, burnt, already ruined. And therefore, it doesn't meet the minimum threshold, the minimum shiur you need for a lulav, because you look at it as if it doesn't exist, or as if it's already crumbled and broken to pieces. So over here too, why don't you say the same thing with regards to the bird? The bird doesn't exist, because of ktutei michtat shiurei. So here you can give one of two answers. One is that ktutei michtat shiurei only matters when there's a shiur that is demanded. When there's a minimum shiur that's demanded, then you argue ktutei michtat shiurei doesn't make the minimum shiur. But here where there's no minimum shiur that's required, it just needs to be a bird, it is a bird that you can't change. Even if you say ketutei michtat shiurei, it's still a bird. Or the other way to view this is that that principle of ketutei michtat shiurei is only according to the shita of Rabbi Shimon, who says that kol omed lisrof ki'ilu nisraf, anything that is going to be burnt, we look at it as if it's already burnt. Or anything that's going to be crushed, we look at it as if it's already going to been crushed. So maybe this principle only exists in the shita of Rabbi Shimon. If that's the case, then over here would be the sheet of the Rabbonon, and therefore it would not be an issue. So that's one possibility. Rova Amar, Lim'utei, Shalo Lezaveg La Acheret, Kodem Shilucheha. So that you don't bring along another pair before you send it away. Lemai, what are you going to do with it? Ilishchita, if you're going to shecht it now, Habay Shiluach. You have to send it away. Ela Lishiluach, to send it away. So you had one mitzvah come to you, and the Kohen orders up two birds for that. He shechts one of the birds, and then he has a second bird that he wants to send away. He says, you know what? We have another mitzvah here. Why don't I hang on to this bird, and we'll use it again for the second mitzvah? Now, the Gemara says, obviously you can't use it for shechita of the second mitzvah, because you need to still send it away. But maybe what I'll do is, I'll hold it over, I'll use it as the free bird that I need for the second mitzvah. So I'll shecht one pair with it, and keep it to send away. Then when I get to the second mitzvah, I'll bring another bird in, shecht it, and then I'll finally set it free after I've covered both of them. So I'm able to accomplish with three birds what would have taken four birds, I can do now with three birds. So that's what the pasuk comes to exclude, and tell you that shiluach doesn't apply over here. You're not allowed to double up on the shiluach. You have to send it the first time. You can't send it after you've done it or used it again. But Papa Amar, Papa says it's the Tziporim shechlifu b'avodah zarah, that it was Tziporim that were exchanged for avodah zarah. Dichtiv vayayita cherem kamo. It says that the avodah zarah will be cherem, meaning that it'll be something that is restricted to you. Kol she'ata mechayem en heimenu kamo. The Gemara dashes from that anything that you bring about because of it also takes on the properties of it. Meaning that if the avodah zarah is what facilitates your ability to buy these birds, then the problem or the isur hana'ah of the avodah zarah transfers or is impactful on these birds. And so these birds are also asurim because of that. And for that reason, you can't utilize it for the tziporim of the mitzvah. But my, ili shiluach, If it's the bird you're going to send away, lo maratorash shaleach letakala. It's clear that the Torah didn't tell you to send it away to get you into trouble or get someone else into trouble, because here it's avodah zarah that's asur ba'anah. Of course, you can't be sending it free for someone else to get it. Elo shechita. You're not allowed to use it for the bird of shechita. Ravina amar hocha bayaskinan ba'ov sharaget nefesh. Going back to the end, on the bottom of Kof Lamed Chet Amud Bet, where we suggested over there that based on our understanding of a bird of Hekdesh, that you would also have the same reasoning or logic with regards to a bird that kills. Because the bird that kills is then needed to be brought to Beit Din and not be sent away. And therefore there's no din of Shiluach HaKain. And what he's suggesting here is the same thing is true by Mitzorah. There's no din of Shiluach for such a bird. Hey, Chidami, what's the scenario? Just like we asked back on Kuf Lamed Chet Amud Bet, if it is already that they came to a verdict, bar katolahu, going to be sentenced to death. The way that I explained it over there is that you don't have this waiting period. By animals, you don't have an obligation to be hofech letzad zchut. By an individual, you have to be meilin etadin. You have all these rules that try to delay the verdict and then delay the sentencing in case we might find something to be mehapech lizchuto, to overturn the conclusion in the favor of the person that's being killed. By behemoth, you don't have such an obligation, and therefore if it was subject to a death penalty, you would have executed upon it immediately. Or there are those that want to suggest that the fact that it already has been sentenced to death means that if Beit Din is unable to execute it, then whoever finds the animal can execute on the verdict of Beit Din and should kill the animal because it's subject to a death penalty. Or the possibility that, why is this animal running around? If Beit Din already had a verdict and is going to put it to sentence it to death, then where is this animal coming from that we could use it? It's locked up, it's with Beit Din, it's going to be put to death. There's no accessibility to it. Ela kodem gemar dino. But here it's before the gemar din. Vilamai, what are you going to use it for? Ili shiluach ba'ili tuya le Beit Dina. If you're going to use it for the bird you're going to send away, then you have to bring it to Beit Din. It's the same reasoning by Shiluach HaKain while you're patur. So to over here by the birth of the Mitzorah, you can't utilize it because you're not allowed to send it away because you have an obligation to bring it into the court. B'kiyume, in order to fulfill the pasuk, will be artara mikirbecha, that you have to eliminate the bad from amongst you. Now, Rashi said before on top of Kuf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph that refers even to human beings, which is that any time that there should be something that the Beit Din needs to adjudicate or to try somebody for, then you have an obligation to present that individual or bring them to Beit Din so Beit Din can adjudicate whatever needs to be taken care of. So there is that requirement, according to Rashi, by human beings. It would seem that possibly that spills over into animals. The reason it might spill over is either because we say that the death penalty of an animal is similar to the death penalty of the owners. That's the way it's expressed in the Torah. And just like the owners is an obligation of biyatara, so too by the animals. Or the Gemara does invoke the pasuk biyatara mikibecha about animals that are dangerous. And so since this animal is dangerous, maybe it's subsumed under the din of biyatara mikibecha, so you need to bring it to Beit Din. Or you could believe that biyatara mikibecha has application not just by human beings, but also by animals as well, that you need to bring them to the court in order to be adjudicated. Ella the shechita. You're going to use it for shechita. And as Rashi notes, when you do the shechita here, you also will accomplish uviyat ha'arah. Even though you think it was okay, it's disqualified over here, this of sharag et ha'nefesh. Now, here you had four answers to the problem. First of all, Rashi points out that you learn it out of the word tohorot. It says, the hachi mashma tohorot. The meaning, or the word tohorot over here is miklal de'ikasurot, that there's something that's asur. So Rashi says this is all learnt out of the word Torot, and even though the word Torot doesn't exactly give you these items, it just means it's something's tahor as opposed to being asur. And then what is it that is asur? These are the lists of the four items that were brought by the Amoraim over here. The Baal Yeh Tosafot add another dimension and say it's not only from the word Torot, the word chayot is also extraneous over here. So you actually have two words here. And therefore, the Baal Yeh Tosafot make a suggestion that you can include any two of the Amoraim over here, that they'll agree with each other, as long as they're not mutually exclusive, they would agree with each other, and therefore the chayot and tehorot would then include two of these items and not just one of them. Or the possibility is that they're all right. And all of these are limudim that are coming from the word chayot and tehorot. And therefore, the Rambam paskins, at least like three out of the four of these, despite the fact that the Gemara here brings it as a machloket, he brings it the halacha because the word tehorot would exclude any one of these items. Or you can use the word chayot to help you out as well, but it would exclude all of these items, not just one of them. Said if it's a non-kosher bird that is incubating kosher eggs, then it's not chayav in shiluach hakein. Bishlamo oftame rovetz abetzei tohor veinan tzipor veleka. When you have a non-kosher bird that's incubating kosher eggs, then we know that it's a failure in shiluach hakein because we already just defined that the word tzipor means a kosher bird. So the only thing you could be sending away is a kosher bird, and over here it's a non-kosher bird. So I understand why that's disqualified. Ella oftahor rovetz abetzei oftame. In a case where it's a kosher bird incubating non-kosher eggs, ha tziporu, you made the cut. I mean, you have a kosher bird over here, it's a tzipor, why shouldn't you be chayav in shiluach hakein? That comes from kedamer Rav Kahana, the din of Rav Kahana, which is that et abanim tikach lach, that you take the chicks or the eggs for yourself, velo leklabecha, but not for your dogs. It has to be something that you can eat, not something that you can feed to your animals and get hana from. It has to be a achila and not just a heter hana. And therefore, this doesn't qualify because these are non-kosher eggs. Hachinami, so to in our case, tikach lach alo leklavecha. Veicha itmar de Rav Kahana. So okay, you brought Rav Kahana and said so to over here. Where's the original of Rav Kahana? Aha, goes on this, the Tanya, aim trefa. If the mother is a trefa, chayav bishiluach. There is a din of shiluach hakein. Efrochim trefot, if the chicks are trefot, patur mi shiluach, then there's no din of shiluach hakein. Obviously, it didn't mention beitzim here, because there's no way to tell if a beitza is a trefa. But speaking about the mother and the chicks, the mother that's a trefa does not obviate the need for shiluach hakein, whereas efrochim trefot do eliminate the need for shiluach hakein. Minahane mile, how do you know this? Amarav kana, damakra, tikach lach, lo leklavecha. You have to be able to take them for yourself and not for your dog. Chicks that are trefot, the only thing they're good for is your dog. You can't eat them. And that's why there's no din of shiluach hakein in that case. So that's the original statement of Rav Kahana. The truth is that you would need Rav Kahana for our Mishnah as well. And so why doesn't the Gemara bring that Rav Kahana's original statement was on our Mishnah? Is because the Mishnah, you could have explained in a way that would have not required Rav Kahana, and that is to say that there's a hekesh between the mother and the chicks, and that's what provides the heter. Over here, the Braita makes it clear that there is no hekesh between the mother and the chicks, because it tells you the din of the mother is different than the din of the chicks. So since there's no hekesh between them that could have given you the isur, the only reason it could be a sur is because of Rav Kahana. And that's why the Gemara says that Rav Kahana was on this Braita, where it's clear that the reasoning that you have to say that there's a problem is independent of the mother. And that's what Rav Kahana tells you. What is that reason? The Gemara says, Ulahakish aim trefa le'efrochim. Why don't we make a hekesh between the mother that's a trefa and the efrochim? Ma efrochim trefot patur mishiluach. Just like the chicks that are trefot, there's no din of shiluach hakein. Af aim trefa, nami patur mishaleach. So too, the mother bird that's a trefa should be patur from shiluach hakein. Where it says, imkein tzipor v'me'utei oftamei lomoli. Then if that's the case, what do I need the word tzipor, which only means a kosher bird, to tell me that a non-kosher bird is disqualified? The reason a non-kosher bird would be disqualified is because, just like non-kosher efrochim would be disqualified, so too a non-kosher bird would be disqualified. The fact that you have to disqualify a bird that is non-kosher teaches you that there is no hekesh over here, and that the mother is disqualified independently of the chicks. And just because the chicks are disqualified doesn't mean a mother of the same type of problem would be disqualified. By the case of Tamei, it is true that she's disqualified, but that's because of the word Sipor. By the case of Trefa, where we don't have a miut, then the chicks are disqualified because there it's Lach, Velo Leklavecha, as opposed to the mother that doesn't have a limud, So therefore, the mother bird that's a treifat does not poter you from shiluach hakein. V'atanya im efrochim treifa chaya b'shiluach. Sounds like this, that if you have efrochim that are treifot, you are chayav in shiluach hakein, which would go against what we just said here, that if the efrochim are treifot, then there's no need for shiluach hakein. Amar Abaye hachi kamar. You read it wrong. Efroach she'iman treifa, a chick whose mother is treifa, chayav b'shiluach. That requires shiluach. So the first way they read the braita is, im efrochim treifa chayav. If their efrochim are treifot, then shiluach is required. Then Abaye comes along and says, you read it wrong. It's not im, but rather aim. So aim efrochim treifa. The mother of the efrochim that is a treifa, you are chayav with shiluach hakein. Whether the word is im or aim actually will make a difference, and that's what Abaye is saying, that the braita itself, you're reading it incorrectly, and the braita is referencing to the mother, not to the chicks. The way Abaye answers or explains the braita, it's no longer a problem for Rav Kahana. Abaye Rav Hoshaya. Rav Hoshaya asks the following question. It's not an easy question because even the practicalities of the case are somewhat difficult. Hoshidya dol the cane. He put his hand into a nest. Shachat miut simanim. Then he shefted not enough to make it a kosher shkita. Now when he goes in there, it does a partial shkita. If he does nothing more, the birds that are in there will become nevelot. Because they didn't even succeed at getting a shkita. They're going to be nevelot. If he continues the shkita, you have a kosher shkita, and then they will be ra'oi the achila. Rashi here says that we're speaking about the shkita of the chicks. Just know that some have in the Girsa of the Rambam, and the Ran brings something similar, that the shkita that we're speaking about here is the shkita to aim and not the shkita of the efrochim. And the question revolved around the mother and not about the chick. The Gemara wants to know, mahu, what's the din over here? Mi aminin kevin dilu shaviklu mitarfe. So since if he had left them, they would have been treifot, be'inan lach v'lo lakla becha. And since you asked to be ra'oi for you and not your dogs, at this moment in time, they're not ra'oi for you. And therefore, there's no din of shiluach hakein. Oh, Dilma gave in to be adol the migmar shchita, since it's in his capacity to finish off the shchita, tikach lach greenenbay. Therefore, it is qualified for you to take it. V'chayav v'shiluach. And you would be required to do shiluach hakein. The Gemara leaves this as a teku. The difficulty in the case, aside from the fact that he's going into a nest and shechting, is the fact that we have a psul in shchita called shiya, which is that you're not allowed to tarry or delay during the shchita. So what exactly is the scenario here where he's gone through miut simanim and he hasn't stopped, and yet he is then able to complete the shchita and be okay? So what you have to say here is that this is according to the views that shiya is not an immediate thing. Not shia means any tarrying is problematic. It's tarrying beyond a certain threshold that would be problematic. Usually it is the amount of time it would take you to finish the shkita. If you wait more than that amount of time, then it would be a problem of shia, and that would make it into a nevela. And that would be a failure in the shkita. What you have to say here is that he shefted it, but not wait over that requisite amount of time to make it into shia, so that it wasn't a problem of shia. That's why it makes the case just a little more complicated, because of the practicalities of how did he actually do this. The other issue that you have to get over is that we said in yesterday's daf that if you pick up the chicks before you send away the mother bird, then you've already acquired the chicks, and then sending away the mother bird is meaningless in that context. Sending away the mother is not a mitzvah anymore. Because we said before, the agbinu le'efrochim v'akdishinu, if he lifts up the efrochim and makdishtem, v'adar adrinu, and then puts them back in the nest, there, even if it's chulin, you're not chayav to do shiluach hakein. So, so to over here, if he's shechting the chicks, isn't that some sort of kinyan on the chicks already, which would then disqualify it from the din of shiluach hakein? Now, over there, it definitely says dak beinu. He lifted them up. So that would have to be your argument here, is that he's shechting them without lifting them up, which only makes it even more complicated. They have no counter pressure to the shechita of the bird, because you're not picking them up, you're not holding them in this case. All right, now the Gemara continues and says, Bayrav Yirmiya, Matzlit, Maush Tachot, a piece of cloth, can it be a hefsek? Knafayim, Maush Yachotzu, wings or feathers, What is the din for them with regards to being a hefsek? Beitzim muzarot, unfertilized eggs. Mahu. What's the din there? Shnei sidrei beitzim zuagavzo mahu. If two rows of eggs, one on top of the other, what is the din? Zachar al gabei beitzim, benekeva al gabei zachar mahu. If you have the male incubating and then the mother above the male, what is the din? Gemara says in all these cases, teku. The clear issue, and it's going to become apparent in the Gemara in a second, is that the aim needs to be rovetzet al ha-beitzim or al ha-frochim. Rovetzet means to really crouch or hover over those items. Now you have something separating between the mother and the beitzim, the mother and the chicks. Does that separation then make it it's no longer called aim rovetzet al ha-beitzim or ha-frochim? If that's the case, then you don't have shiloh ha-kein anymore, because you don't qualify for what the Torah says. So Rabbi Yirmiyah queries in a series of questions as to what is considered to be a hefsek or a chatzitza between the mother bird and the chicks. So he first starts with what would be the most obvious to be problematic is a piece of cloth. So the piece of cloth is maybe considered a chatzitza because it doesn't belong there. It's not the min of the mother, it's not the min of the eggs. It's something foreign object that's there. The possibility that why it should work is that the nest is made out of foreign objects. That's the whole way that the nest was made. So maybe therefore it's not a katsita. So if you then say imtim salomar, Rashi only says this about one of the series that it's imtim salomar. The Rosh says that all the questions are an imtim salomar. If you want to tell me that the cloth is a katsita, maybe because that's a foreign object. Feathers or a wing, which are things that are part of the bird, maybe they should not be a chatzitza. And even if you tell me those are a chatzitza because they're not attached to the bird, they're not a part of the bird now, what about an egg that is not fertilized? An egg that's not fertilized belongs there. It's something that happens all the time that you have unfertilized eggs there. And if that's the case, maybe that should not be a chatzitza. It's the same, quote-unquote, min as the eggs itself. Maybe it should not be a chatzitza. Or do we say, since it will never become an efroach, it's not a viable egg, maybe over there, there's no din of shiloach hakein because there's a chatzitza of this egg that's unfertilized above the eggs that are fertilized. And for that reason, there is a hefsek. And if you consider that a chatzitza, move to the next case. The next case is, what about two rows of eggs? If you tell me that a unfertilized egg is a chatzitza, what happens if you have another row of eggs on top? Does that become a chatzitza for the lower eggs? The way Rashi and the Balei HaTosafot learn this is that are the bottom eggs free of shiluach hakein? Because they never touch the mother bird. They're never directly under the mother bird. But the upper ones for sure are chayav and shiluach hakein because they're in contact with the mother. Which means that according to Rashi and Tosafot, the eggs that you have here are all good, fertilized, kosher eggs. It's just a question of whether the chatzitza of one egg above the other egg is enough to be a chatzitza. On the other hand, the Ramban and others learn that the upper row of eggs over here are eggs that for whatever reason are not chayav in shiluach hakein. And the question is, when you have that egg above another egg of kosher eggs or eggs that would be viable eggs, do the upper eggs cause you a problem for the lower eggs? The upper eggs, for sure you don't need shiluach hakein because they're not qualified for whatever reason it is. The lower eggs that are qualified, are they then affected by the eggs that sit on top? Now, when you're talking about a beitza muzeret, an unfertilized egg, okay, maybe that's the reason. But if the eggs on top are also viable, even though they don't require shiluach hakein, maybe that should not be a hefsek or a chatzitza for the eggs down below. Or maybe it is a chatzitza because of the fact that you don't have to perform shiluach hakein on it, so therefore it's a chatzitza between those eggs below that you would have needed shiluach hakein for. And the Gemara left all of those questions in that progression in a teku. Boy, Rabbi Zera, Yonah al beitzei tassil, mahu. What about a Yonah, which is a dove, a pigeon, that is incubating the eggs of a tassil, which is a species of dove? It's a closely related bird. Tassil al beitzei Yonah, mahu, or vice versa. The tassil and the beitzei Yonah, what's the din? Rabbi Tashma, you can learn it as a diuk out of our Mishnah. A yonah and a tassil are both kosher birds, and the eggs are kshirim. So the Mishnah says, oftame ruvetza betzei oftahor, you have a non-kosher bird on kosher eggs, betahor ruvetza betzei oftame, or you have a kosher bird on non-kosher eggs, Patur mi shiluach. There's no din of shiluach a kain. Ha, tahor, v'tahor, chayav. Diok you would make is that if it was a kosher bird on kosher eggs, even though the eggs and the bird are not the same species, it's not the eggs of that bird, nevertheless, you would require shiluach. It says, maybe dilma b'koreh. Maybe it's not true. Maybe it's the case of the koreh, whereby there's a special din where the koreh, even though it incubates other birds' eggs, it's considered to be the mother and requires shiluach hakein. Maybe that din is uniquely associated with the koreh, which we're going to see in a minute why that might be the case, and not a generic statement that any kosher bird on kosher eggs, if it's incubating them, that it's considered to be the aim, even though it's not the biological mother of these eggs. And to say then, you're chayav b'shiluach hakein, the Gemara says, Abaye's diuk out of the Mishnah is good, but not good enough, because you explain the Mishnah a different way, and therefore you don't have a proof from our Mishnah that that is the case. Now the Gemara discusses the issue of koreh, which is koreh zachar, the male koreh, which we said again in the Mishnah, it's not clear if it's a non-kosher bird, like a partridge, or it's a kosher bird that's something close to a pheasant or a wild chicken. Rabbi Eliezer Michayev says you are chayav for shiluach hakein even though it's a male. Ve'chachamim putrim. The other hand, the chachamim say you are patur. And Rashi, in his comments on the Mishnah, which aren't found on the Mishnah, but found in the Gemara just before, says that afa pi she'ina beitzim shelo. The case here is a case where it's a male koreh that's incubating eggs. They're not his eggs. Ho'il u'minhago b'kach. That is the normal practice of these birds, that they actually incubate other birds. So this is not just true of the male, it's true of the female as well. Because the male and female koreh incubate eggs that are not their own. So since it's normal behavior, maybe the din is that it should be chayav and shiluach hakein. So that would be two things that you're saying as a chiddush here. The first of which is, it's not its own eggs. Nevertheless, you are a chayav. That's what we just said before. The koreh has this unique din. And on top of that, you're saying the male is incubating, and it's still chayav, even though it's not a name. And Rashi says about that, v'lo ze shekoreim kuku. This is not the cuckoo bird. The cuckoo bird actually does the opposite. The cuckoo bird lays eggs, and it's a parasite. So it does not incubate its own eggs. It's too lazy to do that. What it does is it flies down to another bird's nest, knocks out one of the eggs from the other bird, and deposits its own egg instead. And lets the mother bird, it's incubating these other eggs, incubate its own eggs, plus one of the cuckoo bird's eggs that it replaced over there. So that's the opposite of what we're discussing here. Here we're discussing birds that incubate other birds' eggs, not birds that deposit eggs to be incubated by other birds. So Rashi says, just no, it's not the cuckoo bird. I'm a Rabbi Abo, my time of the Rabbi Eliezer. As you said, it's very obvious from the pasuk. It says, Va'aim rovetzet. If it's a name, it's a mother, not a father. So why would you ever think that a male koreh should have a din of shiluach hakein? Acha degira degira. We have a gzeirah shava of degira degira. Degira means to brood over or to incubate. Tevalcha, it says in Yirmiyahu, koreh dagar velo yalad, otse osher velo b'mishpat, b'chatzi yamav yazvenu u'bachro yuto yed naval. So just like a koreh, a partridge, or whatever you think the koreh is, when it's hatching what it did not lay, because it incubates eggs that are not its own, so too is a person who amasses wealth unjustly, in the middle of his life, it will leave him, and he'll be proved a fool. So here it's clearly in the male form, because these are all male conjugations. This is this concept that the koreh incubates eggs that are not its own, but in addition to that, it is a male bird that is doing that. Uchtev Atam, and it says in Yishayahu, Shama kinina kipoz vatimaleit ubak'a vidagra betzila ach sham nikvitzu dayot isha reuta. And there, a type of snake will make a nest and lay eggs, and then they will brood over them, incubate them, and they will hatch in its shade. So too the buzzards will gather together. So the translation of the buzzard is less meaningful to us, but the focus on the word dagra, that the description of incubation by the female over here is also called dagar or dagra. And so what he says is there's a gzer shava, the dagar of the koreh zachar, and the dagra, which is the normal incubation of a female of its eggs, The two are using the same verb, and given that, that means that the incubation of the male koreh is classified as incubation that's equivalent to a female incubation. And for that reason, it's qualified as a re'im rovetzet, because the koreh zachar acts like a female and incubates with the same verb the Tanakh uses to describe that incubation. So Rabbi Eliezer says, Gzeira Shava, Dagar, Dagar, that shows that the incubation of the male koreh is equivalent to a female incubation. If that's the case, it would qualify as an aim because of this unique feature. Now, that makes, from that you would precipitate the following din, which is, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Machloket b'kore zachar. Rabbi Elazar says that the machloket between Rabbi Elazar and the Chachamim and the Mishnah is only about a male kore. Aval b'kore nekeva, divrei hakol chayav. Everybody would agree by the kore nekeva that you are chayav. If the problem is that it's a zachar, then if it was a nekeva, it wouldn't be a problem. And that means that even if it was incubating other birds' eggs, since that's the normal thing for this bird to do, she will be classified as the aim, even though she's incubating other birds' eggs. Mara says, pshita. Mishnah says, kore zachar. It's none. That's what our Mishnah says. Mara says, ma'udutemer abonna nafilu kore nekeve patre. That even a kore nekeva, they say, do not require shiluach hakein. Ba'adzani zachar. So then why did write a zachar in the Mishnah? Do diacha, koko de Rabbi Eliezer. To teach you the power of Rabbi Eliezer, that he thinks not only is a koreh nekeva considered for shiluach hakein, so too a koreh zachar is considered for shiluach hakein. Kamash v'lan, that the chachamim don't disagree on that point, and they agree, it's a female koreh, even though she's incubating other birds' eggs, there the din is that, because it's normal, the din is that it requires shiluach hakein. V'amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar makes a qualification from the other side. Machloket b'koreh zachar, of a b'zachar da'alma divrei hakol patur. This is what the Gemara quoted before and why it said Abai is proof may not be the case, which is maybe this is uniquely associated with koreh zachar. And that even Rabbi Eliezer will agree that if it's another male, that would not be the case. Pshita. Again, that's straightforward. Koreh zachar, it's not. That's what it says in our Mishnah. They argue about a koreh zachar. They're not arguing about zicharim in general. It says, no, ma'udetema Rabbi Eliezer afilu zachar da'alma mechayev, even by male birds that are incubating, he would make you chayav, even if it wasn't a koreh. Why did Kani koreh zachar? So then why did it mention koreh zachar? To teach you the power of the rabbanon, that even though by the koreh zachar, we have the gzera shava, and it's the normal behavior of the bird, they still say that there's no din of shiluach hakein. So kamash malon, that's not why we wrote it. We wrote it because that's the only time Rabbi Eliezer thinks that there is a din of shiluach hakein. Therefore now we've narrowed down Rabbi Eliezer's opinion to be only about a koreh zachar. And we also then narrow the machloket that the chachamim agree by a koreh nekeva, that is shluach hakein. So for Rabbi Eliezer, we've narrowed him to say it's only koreh zachar, not zachar v'ama. For the chachamim, we're saying also it's only koreh zachar and not a koreh nekeva, because there they would agree that even though it's incubating other birds' eggs, because it's normal behavior, it's still considered to be an aim, and therefore there is a din of shluach hakein there. Tanya Nomi Ochiv, a bright that supports this understanding. Zachar da'alma, patur. A regular male that is incubating, patur. Kore zachar, Rabbi Lezer Mechayev, a chumim putrim. So you see the bright that supports that their machloket is only about a kore zachar, because the opening statement is that a zachar does not have a din of shiluach hakein, and that seems to cover all things aside from kore zachar, which the bright that says they argue about. And that's why the Gemara before said that maybe the diuk of the Mishnah that says a kosher bird on non-kosher eggs and a non-kosher bird on kosher eggs do not require shiluach hakein, but kosher on kosher would require shiluach hakein. Maybe that's only by a koreh nekeva. A koreh nekeva who normally incubates, and even the chachamim agree that it's incubating on others' eggs, there that might work or require shiluach hakein, but no other foreign incubator would have that din because that's not the normal behavior of such birds. All right. Next Mishnah. Haita me'ofefet. It was hovering over the birds. Bizman shekenafe no goat bakein. If the wings are touching the nest, chayav l'shaleach, then you have a requirement to send away the bird. Ein kenafe no goat bakein. If the wings are not touching the nest, patur me l'shaleach. There's no din of shiluach hakein because the pasuk says rovetzet. Uvetza means literally crouched on or on top of them, rather than hovering over. So hovering over does not require shiduach hakein. Elohim kein, the hovering is like rovetza. The thing that bridges between them is contact. So if there is contact between the wings when it's hovering over, then there is a din of shiduach hakein. Otherwise, you're patur min shleach. Ein sham elo efroach echad o beitza echad. If there's only one chick or one egg, chayav l'shaleach. You still have to do shiluach hakein, shenemar kan. Because the pasuk says kan, kan mikol makom. A nest or a brood, no matter what is there. The havamina is, it says efrochim u'beitzim in plural. So maybe you wouldn't have to do it for a single. So the answer is, kan means any nest. Hayusham efrochim mafrichim. If there are chicks that can already fly, o beitzim muzarot, or eggs that are unfertilized, patur min l'shaleach. There's no din of shiluach hakein there. Shnemar v'ayim rovetzet ala efruchim o ala beitzim. The mother is crouching over the chicks and the eggs. Ma efruchim b'nei kayama. Just like the chicks are viable entities, af beitzim b'nei kayama, so do the eggs have to be viable entities. Beitzim muzarot are unfertilized eggs or eggs that are going to fail to hatch a chick. They are not bnei kayoma, so that's why they don't require shiluach hakein. Yetzu muzarot, that excludes muzarot. Ma beitzim tzrichim li'iman, just like the eggs need to be incubated by the mother. If they're not incubated, the chick will not develop. Av efruchim tzrichim li'iman. So too, it's got to be chicks that need the mother. Yetzu mafrichim. If they can fly on their own, then there's no din of shiluach hakein. They're not called efruchim anymore. Tanrabanan, rovetzet velo me'ofefet. It has to be crouched on them, literally on top of them, and not hovering. You would think even if the wings are touching the nest, Tamalomo Rovetzet. It says Rovetzet. It says my Talmud. What are you teaching me? Rovetzet means on top of. Meofefet means hovering. Why is hovering when they're touching called Rovetzet? It says Mitoloktiv Yoshevet. There was another option. You could have said Yoshevet. The fact that it says Rovetzet rather than Yoshevet indicates that there could be something besides just directly sitting on there. So there could be, if you wanted to say only if it sits directly on them, you would have said Yoshevet. If you wanted to say hovering was okay, you would have said Meofefet. The fact that you used a middle word, a bridging word of Rovetzet, it bridges between the two of them. It says, obviously Yoshevet is Chayav and Shiluach HaKein. Meofefet is not. But if it's a Meofefet that looks like Yoshevet, which is Rovetzet, then you would be a chayav in shiluach hakein. And that's why the Gemara concludes that Rovetzet teaches you not only when it's directly on top of them, but even if it's hovering and touching. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, Hayta Yoshevet ben Shnei Rovdei Ilan, who was sitting on two branches of the tree, meaning that the nest is below it with the eggs or the chicks in it, and the mother bird is sitting right above the nest, and there are these two branches that cut across right on top of the nest, and it's sitting on those branches. So then, Roim, if you were to pull the branches out, the bird would just fall right onto the eggs, the nest down below. Then it qualifies as something that requires shiluach hakein. If not, patur. Then it's patur, because then if you pull them away, it would fall to the side of the nest, away from the nest. That's not called rovetzet. It's still a chiddush here, because he's suggesting over here that rovetzet doesn't need to be directly on. Just means to be in the path of or in line of. Meitave, Hayta Yoshevet b'neihem. If the mother bird is sitting amongst them, patur milishaleach, then you do not have to do shiluach hakein. Al gabeyet, if it's sitting on top of them, then chayav lishaleach, then you have to send it away. Hayta me'ofefet, if it is fluttering, hovering above. Afilu no kofeh no got b'kein, even if the wings are touching the nest, patur milishaleach, you don't have to send it. So this goes against what we were just established before with regards to our Mishnah, that me'ofefet, if it's touching, is chayav in shiluach hakein. Here it says it's not in this braita. We're not yet interested in that problem. We first have to deal with the first part of it, which is, my love, al gabeihem dumia debeinehem. On top of them is similar to amongst them. Ma beinehem denagabahu. Just like when the bird is amongst them, she's touching them. Aval gabehem denagabu. So too, when it's on top of them, it only works when she's touching them. Avrovdeilan, but if she's on top of the branches, patur, because she's not in contact with the chicks or the eggs. Mar says lo. Al gabeim tumia de beneim, the opposite way around. On top, just like in between them. Ma beneim do naga al ayu. Just like when she's sitting amongst them, doesn't mean by definition she needs to touch them. Maybe she's not touching them. Al gabeim do lo naga al ayu. So too, when she's on top of them, she doesn't have to be in direct contact with them. Vahino rov de ilan. That's rov de ilan. That's the scenario. And Gemara says, v'achanami mistabra, that makes sense. Titzakadatka rov de ilan patur. If you think that sitting on the branches is patur, adatani, the latter part of the braita is where it writes, haita me'ofefet afilu knafeh no goat bakein patur, milishaleach, that if it was hovering over, floating over, even if its wings are touching the cane, patur milishneach, litnei, instead you should have written the bigger chiddush, rov de ilan, v'koshu kein me'ofefet, rov de ilan, if it's patur, then certainly me'ofefet is patur. Rashi over here makes a statement that is that ben shnei rov de ilan is called rovetzet. And so therefore, rov de ilan is more likely to be considered rovetzet than me'ofefet, and vice versa. If you think that shnei rov de ilan is not called rovetzet, then you certainly are going to think the me'ofefet is not called a rovetzet. So that's what Rashi points out. It's obvious from the Gemara. I'm just making that note because it doesn't really seem like it. It seems like by me'ofefet and touching, that should be much closer to rovetzet than sitting on the branches and having them separate between the eggs or the nest below. The difference is exactly that. Sitting. When the bird is stationary and on top of them, even if there are branches being mafsik or chatzitza between them, it's still called rovetzet. On the other hand, me'ofefet is exactly that. It's hovering over, it's flying over, but it never really sits or sets itself down on top of them. So for that reason, me'ofefet is less likely to be classified as rovetzet. So the Gemara says, if you, it's true that the rov de ilan or pturim, then write that as the ptur, and we would have known me'ofefet. The Gemara says, no, me'ofefet it's trichale. You have to teach me about me'ofefet. Afilu knafeh no goyut b'kein patur m'lishaleach. That even when the wings are touching the nest, then you're still patur from shiloach ha'kein. Va'anan tznan. Didn't we learn in our Mishnah? So here's finally the Gemara is coming to the fact that we have a stira. Which is our Mishnah, b'zmach k'nafeh nog'ot b'kein chayav l'shaleach. Our Mishnah says explicitly, when the bird's wings are touching the cane, you are chayav l'shaleach. The breita is a case where the contact is from the side, rather than from above. Where it's touching on the sides, but not on their backs. Rovetzet is a case where you're sitting on top of the chicks or the eggs, literally on top of them. So the contact is coming from on top. So in a case where me'ofefet is hovering over, fluttering over, the touch will be considered to be rovetzet. When it touches in the same place, it would be rovetzet, which means al gabehem, on top of them. But if it touches them from the side, that's not going to be qualified as rovetzet, because then you have a deficit in two ways. Number one is it's not rovetzet, because it's me'ofefet. Number two is the contact that you're making is not similar to the contact that rovetzet would have made. And for that reason, it would not be classified as rovetzet, and you would be patur milish shaleach. So now the Gemara says, ikadam, right? There's another version of this statement. Lema misayale. Let us say that this is a proof, the braita that we brought, will it be a proof to the din of Amar Yehuda Marav about Rov De Ilan. Haita yoshevet b'neem patur milish shaleach. If the mother bird's sitting amongst them, there's no din of shiloach hakein. Al gabeen, if she's on top of them, then chayav l'shaleach. Then there is a din of shiloach hakein. It was hovering over, it was fluttering over, and its wings touched the nest, you are patur milishaleach. My love. So now we're going to make the diuk the other way around. Al gabeen dumia de beneem. On top of them is similar to amongst them. Ma beneem dolo naga alayu. Just like when she's sitting amongst them, she's not touching them or doesn't have to be touching them. Af al gabeen dolo naga alayu. So too, when it's perched above them, doesn't mean that she has to actually be touching them. Final rov de ilan, and that's the case of rov de ilan, that would be supportive. Where it says, lo, they make the diok now the other way, the original diok that we made in the first lashon. They say, no, you can read it this way, which is, al gabeihem dumia de beneihem, on them, similar to in between them. Ma beneihem did nagabu, just like when they're amongst them, she's touching them. Af al gabeihem did nagabu, so too, when she's above them, she also would be touching them. Aval rov de ilan, patur. So in essence, what the Gemara is saying is that the braita can go either way. There's no definitive way to read the braita. If that's the case, you can't bring a proof, but you also can't bring a question. Gemara says, if that is true, that shnei rov de ilan would have been patur, then why does the Sefer bring the case of Ptur, a situation where it's floating over and touching the cane, make it the case of Litnei Rov De'ilan? You would have told us the case of Rov De'ilan, but Kol Shekein Me'ofefet, and then we for sure would have known that Me'ofefet is Ptur. Where it says, Me'ofefet, it's Drichole. Again, the same way we finished off the previous Lashon, which is, you need Me'ofefet. Da'filu K'nafet no goat ba'kein, Ptur me'lishaleach. That even if it's touching the cane, you're Ptur me'lishaleach. Ba'nan, what about our Mishnah? Now this is steer with our Mishnah. As much K'nafet no goat ba'kein, chayav l'shaleach. There is a dinner shalach ha'kein. Or Rabbi Yehuda, kitani matnitin, b'nogea minatzad. Here the word matnitin is probably incorrect. It's not our Mishnah that's minatzad. It is the Braita that is minatzad. Our Mishnah is al-gabehen. That's why it's qualified. Ein sham ela efroach echad. If there's only one there, there's still a din of shiluach hakein, even though the pasuk says that brochim ubeitzim. I'm only on my rabban on the rova. Eima ipcha. Why do you consider it this way and not the other way? Ein sham efroach ela echad ubeitzachad patur milisholeach. Maybe if there's only one egg or one chick there, there's no din of shiluach hakein. The bein an efrochim ubeitzim, because you need to have a plurality of chicks or eggs, v'leka, and that fails. Hayusha mefrochim africhim obitzim muzarot. If you have there the chicks that can already fly on their own, obitzim muzarot, or eggs that will never be viable, chayav l'shaleach, you will have to send them away. If there are kan mikol makom, and you darshan kan to come and include any type of nesting that would be qualified for shiluach hakein. How do you know to include a case where there's one egg or one chick, and to exclude the cases where the chicks can fly, or a case where the eggs are not viable? Where it says, because imkein lichtob kra va'emro betzet aleihem, because then the puzzle could have just written the mother was crouching or incubating them. My va'emro betzet alei frochim o ala beitzim. So then, why did it write the extraneous lashon of efrochim and beitzim? Efrochim and beitzim already mentioned in the pasuk. So you could just say, Aim Rovetzet Aleihem, and the antecedent of Aleihem would have been Beitzim and Efrochim. Why did the Torah go out of its way to write Efrochim and Beitzim again? Akushi Efrochim the Beitzim, to create the hekesh between chicks to eggs, Ubeitzim Efrochim and eggs to chicks. That's what we saw before by the Mishnah, that the Efrochim are governed by the Beitzim. Just like Beitzim need the mother to incubate them, so too it's only the chicks that need the mother. And Beitzim are like Efrochim. Just like Efrochim are viable entities, so too the Beitzim have to be viable entities. And that's why we learned it in that direction. That leaves us then Kan available to make a drosha, that Kan comes to teach you Kan mikol makom, even if it's just one egg or just one chick, it still has a din of shiluach hakein. And then you have to read Efrochim and Beitzim, not to mean in this particular case, but generally Efrochim and Beitzim amongst Klal Yisrael, amongst different nests. That's why you have a plurality, but not to indicate that in a single nest, you're only chayav in shiluach hakein if there's a plurality in that nest. Okay, I'm going to stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Kuf Mem Aleph, Amud Aleph.